You know how in law school you're constantly thinking about who has the real power? Well, today we're taking a deep dive into a Florida Supreme Court case, Jones v. Childs, that shines a bright light on the crucial concept of separation of powers, something absolutely fundamental for every one of you future lawyers to grasp.
That's right. We're zeroing in on Jones v. Childs, a 1994 decision out of the Florida Supreme Court. What's fascinating here is how this case really dissects the inherent tensions and, you know, the necessary boundaries between the different branches of Florida's government.
Exactly. At its heart, this case is a classic showdown. The governor's constitutionally granted authority to appoint executive officers bumping up against the legislature's attempt to essentially, well, mandate the reappointment of compensation claims judges. It forces us to ask a really basic but critical question: who ultimately decides who gets to hold these important positions?
And to really get a handle on this, we've pulled together a comprehensive set of materials. We're looking at some guidance to frame our discussion, a detailed case brief outlining all the specifics, a standard legal brief that boils down the essential arguments, and even excerpts from the original text of the decision itself.
Right.
Our mission in this deep dive is to synthesize all of that information into a clear and concise understanding of this pivotal case and, maybe more importantly, why it holds such significance for those of you embarking on your legal careers.
Okay, let's unpack this then. This whole case hinges on the separation of powers. For folks who might be just encountering this concept, can you give us a quick rundown of why it's such a cornerstone of our governmental structure?
Absolutely. The separation of powers doctrine is, well, it's a bedrock principle designed to safeguard our system of government. Essentially, it strategically distributes governmental authority across three distinct branches: the legislative, the executive, and the judicial.
The classic three branches.
Exactly. The core idea behind this distribution is to prevent any single branch from becoming, you know, excessively powerful and potentially overreaching its authority.
Mm.
Each branch gets specific roles and responsibilities, and importantly, there's a system of checks and balances built in to provide oversight.
Right. And in the context of Jones v. Childs, the specific tension arises between the governor's role, which, as the Constitution says, includes supreme executive power, encompassing the power to appoint executive officers, and the legislature's attempt to essentially dictate who remains in those executive roles.
Precisely. Through a statute, the legislature was attempting to make the reappointment of these compensation claims judges mandatory under certain conditions. Governor Childs contended that this legislative action overstepped the constitutional boundaries, you know, delineating the powers of the executive branch.
So who are we talking about in this scenario? Give us a bit of background on the key players and the sequence of events.
Okay. The central figure is John Paul Jones, Jr. He had served as a compensation claims judge for quite a while, a full 20 years, actually, having been reappointed five times previously.
Wow, a long tenure.
Yeah. Now, at the time, Florida Statute Section 440.45 governed the appointment and reappointment processes for these positions. Crucially, the statute as it existed before 1993 stipulated that if a nominating commission voted in favor of retaining a compensation claims judge, the governor had to reappoint them.
Had to. No discretion.
That's the key. There was no element of gubernatorial discretion in that specific scenario, according to the statute.
Okay, so this nominating commission essentially held the power of continued employment for these judges?
That's the crux of the conflict, really. In 1992, the statewide nominating commission did indeed vote to retain Judge Jones. But here's where it gets really interesting, especially thinking about separation of powers. Governor Lawton Childs refused to reappoint him. His argument was that this particular provision of the statute, the mandatory reappointment clause, was unconstitutional because it encroached upon his constitutionally vested executive authority. And it was this refusal, this specific act, that ignited the legal challenge, ultimately landing the case before the Florida Supreme Court.
So for the court, the core legal question seems pretty direct then, right? Could the legislature really compel the governor to reappoint someone in this manner?
Exactly. The central legal issue the Florida Supreme Court had to resolve boiled down to this. Did that specific provision in the statute unconstitutionally strip the governor of his inherent power to appoint executive officers by mandating reappointment solely based on the nominating commission's vote?
And what was the Florida Supreme Court's ultimate answer to that critical question?
They sided with Governor Childs. The court definitively held that the mandatory reappointment provision embedded within the statute was, in fact, unconstitutional.
Okay, so what was the primary line of reasoning that led them to that conclusion? What were the key pillars of their argument?
The court's reasoning turned on a couple of really significant points. First, and this is crucial for understanding separation of powers in action, they determined that compensation claims judges are, in fact, executive officers.
Not judicial.
No, not part of the judicial branch. Instead, their function is within the Department of Labor and Employment Security, which is an agency operating directly under the governor's supervisory authority.
That makes logical sense. If these judges are functioning within the executive branch, then it follows that the executive should have a more direct say in who occupies those roles.
Precisely. And that leads us to the second key element of the court's reasoning. Article 4, Section 1 of the Florida Constitution explicitly vests the governor with supreme executive power.
Right. We mentioned that.
And the court interpreted this grant of power to include the fundamental authority to appoint executive officers. They emphasized that this power of appointment is an intrinsic and essential function of the executive branch.
So by requiring the governor to reappoint someone just because the commission said so, the statute was essentially undermining that core constitutional authority.
Exactly. The court astutely pointed out that the statute transformed the governor's role in the reappointment process into one that was purely ministerial. What that means, for you as future lawyers, is that it removed any element of discretion.
No judgment call allowed.
Right. No opportunity for the governor to exercise independent judgment in the decision. As the court itself powerfully stated, this procedure effectively eliminates his power. That absence of gubernatorial discretion in the reappointment, in the court's analysis, was the fatal flaw. It made the statute a violation of the separation of powers by improperly encroaching upon the executive branch's core functions.
So this case really draws a firm boundary line, doesn't it, regarding what the legislature can and cannot do when it comes to appointing executive officials?
Precisely. It establishes crucial limits. While the legislature undoubtedly has the authority to create frameworks and processes for appointments, like setting up nominating commissions to find qualified candidates, they cannot overreach to the point of completely eliminating the governor's discretionary power to ultimately make the appointment decision for these executive roles.
So the commission can recommend, but not command.
That's a good way to put it. What's really insightful here isn't just that the governor won, but how this ruling reinforces the principle that the inherent nature of the role, whether it's executive, legislative, or judicial, significantly dictates which branch has the ultimate say. It suggests a broader principle, really.
How so?
Well, it implies that other legislative attempts to tightly control the staffing of the executive branch beyond just setting qualifications or suggesting candidates will likely face similar constitutional scrutiny. Think about how this might apply to other boards or commissions you might encounter in practice.
And this case also really highlights the distinction the court made between executive and judicial roles. It sounds like the organizational placement where these compensation judges sat in the government structure was absolute key.
Absolutely critical. Because they were situated within the Department of Labor and Employment Security, clearly under the executive branch's purview and the governor's direct supervision, they were rightly deemed executive officers. If their roles had somehow placed them within the judicial branch, the analysis and probably the outcome could have been very different.
It's interesting that the court even mentioned the 1993 statutory reforms. What was the significance of bringing that up?
Right. So following this very legal challenge, the Florida legislature proactively amended the statute. That's Chapter 93-415. The court referred to this as the fix.
The fix. How did it fix it?
Under this revised process, the nominating commission still plays a vital role. They provide a list of qualified nominees to the governor, but the crucial difference is that the governor now retains the discretion to choose from that list.
Ah, so a choice is back with the governor.
Exactly. This revised process effectively preserves the governor's constitutional appointment power while still incorporating the valuable input of the nominating commission. It serves as a really good example of how the branches can interact and adjust within the established constitutional boundaries, you know. Now, supreme executive power isn't absolute, of course, and this case highlights where those boundaries lie in relation to legislative powers.
So for us law students listening and trying to absorb all this, what are some of the really key takeaways or maybe potential pitfalls we should be mindful of based on this case?
Okay, several important points. First, make sure you really grasp why these compensation judges were classified as executive, not judicial. It boils down to their placement and function within the executive branch. Don't just assume anyone doing quasi-judicial stuff is in the judiciary.
Good point.
Second, really take note of how that 1993 statutory reform illustrates a proper balance. The legislature can set up a framework, like the nominating commission, but it can't eliminate the executive's discretion for executive roles.
And what about that term ministerial act the court used? That seemed pretty important.
It absolutely is. Jones v. Childs gives a really clear illustration of the difference between ministerial acts and discretionary acts. A ministerial act needs no judgment. It's mandatory, like the governor having to reappoint under the old statute if the commission said yes.
Right, just follow the instructions.
Exactly. A discretionary act, though, involves choice and judgment, like the governor now being able to select from a list. The court pinpointed the purely ministerial nature under the old law as the core constitutional problem.
And didn't Judge Jones ask for a specific kind of court order? Mandamus?
Yes, good catch. He sought a writ of mandamus, which is basically a court order telling a government official to do a duty they're legally obligated to perform. He wanted the court to force Governor Childs to reappoint him.
But the court said no.
Right. They denied that relief because they weren't going to compel the governor to take an action. The reappointment that the court itself had just declared unconstitutional. You can't force someone to do something unlawful.
All of this really circles back to that foundational principle we started with, the separation of powers.
Exactly. Jones v. Childs serves as a really concrete and important example for you of why the separation of powers doctrine is so absolutely vital for a well-functioning democracy. It's fundamentally about preventing too much power concentrating in any single branch. Here, it was about ensuring the legislature couldn't unduly control who serves in key executive positions.
So as we think about the landscape of Florida governance today, how does the ruling in Jones v. Childs fit into the broader picture? What's its lasting impact?
I see it as a really crucial guardrail within our system. It clearly establishes that while the legislature plays an indispensable role in making laws, its authority isn't unlimited. It can't overstep its constitutionally defined boundaries and encroach upon the governor's core executive powers, particularly that fundamental power of appointment.
So a warning shot, in a way.
You could say that. For any of you aspiring lawyers analyzing statutes, especially those dealing with government structure and appointments, the key question you should always ask is, does this law potentially cross the line and intrude into another branch's constitutional territory? Jones v. Childs gives a very clear, instructive example of when the Florida Supreme Court said, yes, that line was crossed.
So to bring it all together, the fundamental takeaway for everyone listening from Jones v. Childs is that the Florida Supreme Court firmly upheld the separation of powers doctrine. It prevented the legislature from stripping the governor of the core constitutional authority to appoint executive officers.
That's precisely the core of it. It stands as a significant case for understanding the delicate balance of power within Florida's government and the distinct yet interconnected roles of the executive and legislative branches. It makes you think, though. Considering the court's strong emphasis on the executive nature of these compensation judge roles, how might that classification influence the level of deference courts give to the actual decisions those judges make later on?
Interesting thought. That was our deep dive into Jones v. Childs. Keep cracking those cases, future legal eagles.